Things I have loved, I'm allowed to keep by anything but gray. Whenever it pours, he finds himself in the garage. Never understood that phase until now. Finding himself somewhere? There's an active process to motion, transferring from point A to B. Or there used to be active processes, but then there was Bella Swan, and everything has been out of control ever since. I can always find you here in the rain, Leah says, her voice floating down underneath the hood of the car, and he flinches at the intrusion. He steps away from the car, wiping his hands on an old, dirty towel. What are you doing here, Leah? She smirks. Leah always smirks. It's ridiculously aggravating how much she manages to cover up every inch of herself until he can't find anything to look at but a false image, an actress constantly on screen. Of course, he also knows how that feels, but he's nowhere near as good as hiding as Leah is. He wishes he were. He wishes the pack couldn't see straight through him, down to his bones where they can identify every splotch on the x-ray as permanent damage. How's the car? Leah says, because there's not much to say, and even less Jacob is willing to talk about since he got back. Since Sam begged him back with, we need you here, Jacob. He left Canada just before the edge of Quebec. He was looking forward to drowning himself in a world he couldn't understand, let the senselessness sweep over him and drown out histories he'd rather forget. He has never been the type for languages, prefers silence and numbers, but escapes are sometimes necessary, and what better way to flee than to lose everything of his past down to the very words he spoke. Leah sits on an old box, twirling a wrench between her fingers as he bends down underneath the hood of the car again. He doesn't answer her question. The wedding is tomorrow, she says, even though he knows. Of course he knows. He can still feel her breathing, the sound of it in his head. Her heart still beats in his skull, and he has a welcome headache from the repeated noise. None of them understand why or how he can feel her inside, but he does. Because things have always been this way. Her pain, his pain. Her life, his life. As her existence slips away, he grabs onto it with slippery fingers. This is how she came to be living inside of him for her final days of life. Leah stands and moves too close to him. He can smell the aftermath of last night's adventures on her skin and winces at what Sam will feel when night comes and patrol begins. Are you going to do anything? Leah asks. Quietly. He blinks and moves away from the car too quickly. His entire body jerks back, and Leah jumps in surprise. She's tall, too, but nowhere near his height, and even she gets a little intimidated by him these days. They'll all worry he'll snap soon. He doesn't blame them for a second. He thinks he'll snap, break, soon, too. Soon being tomorrow. What do you recommend, Leah? He barks. This isn't the sort of thing I can change. She made her decision. I gave her everything. His voice breaks on the last word, his hand running over his face and up along his scalp. He cut off all of his hair in Minneapolis, wanting to push every inch of her out. He can't say her name anymore, can't even think it. She's just that, a she, a nameless face that makes his knees feel like the cartilage has been shot out. He coughs, turning back to the car. Things make sense now. Logical answers. Here, he can give sparks to old, dead things. I gave her everything, he continues, and she decided it wasn't enough. There's nothing I can do now. Leah frowns. When did you turn into the type to give up, Jacob? And it's true. He spent so many months fighting that even he thought that that was his natural state of being, that he would never give up, that he would fight for Bella past her death and into his own, whenever that was. But the invitation came as heavy proof of the inconsequence of his actions, and it's been too hard to breathe ever since. Fighting is out of the question if lungs won't function properly. He says, a long time ago, because that's how it feels. He remembers being 16. If he thinks back harder, he can remember 15, then 14, 13, 12. Life before her. Things are fuzzy there. like they were all a dream. He can't decide if he prefers the dream or the final awakening, but 16 is tangible. He feels her skin under his fingertips whenever he closes his eyes, and breathing leaves the taste of her in his mouth. Everything hurts. Everything hurts. Leah hands him a bottle of scotch. She knows what it's like to have to forget by morning. He doesn't remember the next day or the day after. Her wedding happens and passes by as he sits locked in the bathroom with Leah's alcohol. He stumbles downstairs in the middle of the night for more, then passes out on the couch to awaken at sunrise. 2 days after Bella's wedding now, and he wonders if the transformation burns. It's around noon, when he's on his fifth cup of coffee to drown out the pounding in his head he blames on a hangover, that a jolt of fire shoots through his palm, up his arm, creeping into his neck, into his skull. His entire body burns at intolerable levels, and he stumbles off the kitchen chair and collapses on the floor, his father's creaking wheelchair perching with faint cries of "Jacob!" before the world goes black. He dreams. His heart still hurts, and his skin still burns like thrown into lava, and he twitches in pain, but he dreams. He dreams of her. He always dreams of her, but this is different. This is surround sound with blasting speakers, like those 4D rides at Disney World where the seats shake and water splashes onto your face, and it's not a ride or a dream anymore. It's real. It's a vision. He stands in the corner of a room he can't recognize, but the smell of leech washes over him, and he coughs fitfully to attempt to drown it out. It must be the Cullens' room, he assumes. Yes, Edward's room, because Bella lies on a bed, freshly purchased with the tag still on the side, and she's screaming. And screaming. His immediate reaction is to run forward, grab her hand, and beg her to tell him how to fix her. But his feet won't move from the corner, and he can do nothing but watch as Edward sits next to her and waits and watches as the woman they both love begins to die. Jacob wakes up screaming her name in Sam's face, leaning over him. It's pretty common he wakes shouting for her, though, his hands reaching out like she's just an inch away. This is how he learns Bella has begun to change. The fire burns through his skin for the next 3 days, and then, suddenly, it blinks out. And this is how he learns Bella has changed. End game. Doesn't really surprise him. He is able to feel it in his blood and bones. The others never quite understood it, though. 4 months pass. 4 months of silence. The pack goes on patrol without him. The Cullens are gone. Charlie sits tired and aging more and more every day by the fireside, and any coming war remains at a standstill. He gets a phone call a sunny day in August. Sunny days remind him of her. The way her skin must look in the light now. Truthfully, every day reminds him of her. Every second, every hours, every instant between inhaling and exhaling. She's still the focus of every human function. He blinks out her face and breathes in her skin and swallows the sensation of wanting to scream. Jacob, Billy calls. Phone. If Jacob were more attentive, he would have heard the twinge lacing through Billy's voice. The phone is warm in his hands, and he remembers how he shouldn't have picked up the phone that day in Bella's kitchen, and again hates how every noun and verb leads back to her. Hello, he says, voice gruff from lack of use. Jacob, a female voice he can't quite place, says, I need your help. He frowns. Who is this? Scoff runs through the line. Rosalie Hale, I trust you remember me. She meets him by the treaty line. He took care not to shift, so none of them know she's there, and no one will attack her. He needs to hear what she says, of course. He knows it's about Bella. It only could be about Bella. It's about Bella, she says. He wants to scream at the sound of her name out loud. He hasn't heard it spill from anyone's mouth in months. His fingers balled into fists. What about her? Rosalie shakes her head with a sigh. Since we turned her... He waits, his fingernails digging into his skin to keep from shifting. The vampire too close. The topic of discussion too painful. Emotions are easier as the wolf. She sighs. Since she Since we turned, she hasn't woken up. His nails break the skin at that, palms bleeding out. Stamps frowns. What are we supposed to do? The treaty line has 3 people now. Well, 2.5 if Rosalie even counts for that much of humanity. He drove back to Emily's and found Sam and brought him back to Rosalie at the line. One of the Denali sisters, Rosalie begins. Who? Jacob interrupts. She glares at him for the interruption. One of our kind, Rosalie says, voice tight. Doesn't drink human blood. Anyway, Katrina, Kate. She can see people's dreams. And even though Bella won't wake up, she's still dreaming. Jacob's fists clench at that. The notion of Bella trapped in some dream state, unable to get out, and prays she's dreaming of sunlit afternoons and cream pies, nothing dangerous or tormenting. Rosalie eyes his hands. It's okay, she says, the natural edging in her voice dissipating. It's not hurting her. Jacob sighs out the breath he didn't realize he was holding. Sam crosses his arms. You still haven't answered my question. Her eyes tick to Jacob. He studies them, the black inflections in the amber. Kate says she's dreaming of you, Rosalie says. Her voice grates inside her throat and on his skin. The thing is, it should be easy. It should mean Jacob gets on a plane and sits next to Rosalie for a few hours, breathing in a different direction than her skin. It should mean Jacob shows up at the door and Edward steps aside at the sight of him and Jacob runs to Bella's room and then... This isn't some fairy tale, he bites. I'm not the knight in shining armor. I don't have some kind of kiss that will wake the princess from deep sleep. I don't know how to save her. Rosalie sighs. I don't know either, but Edward. She chokes at the name. Jacob frowns, eyes narrowing. Edward, she tries again. He wants your help. He thinks, I don't even know, but he loves her just as much as you do, Jacob, and he thinks you could save her. Somehow. So it's not just Bella who likes lining Edward up as a martyr. He'd hate to think that there's some truth behind that myth. Next to him, Sam sighs. We'll get back to you. Rosalie hands him a paper with a number neatly scrawled across the front. Call me, she laughs before vanishing from sight. The echo of her footfalls floating back and filling Jacob's ears. I don't like it, Quill says. It could be a trap. It's not a trap, idiot. Seth replies, rolling his eyes. It's Bella. He looks over at Jacob in his silence. He sits in the chair at the end of the table across from Sam at the head. Right? Seth asks, almost timid to address Jacob on the topic. Bella would never lead us to a trap. Jacob shakes his head. No, he whispers. She wouldn't let them do that. She's not awake, Paul snaps. If you believe that part, it'd still be a trap. She's not awake to stop them. They know your weaknesses, Jacob. He flinches. If she's not awake, it doesn't matter. We have to help her. Paul bristles and turns away to stuff a muffin in his mouth. Why? Leah asks from Jacob's left, turning to face him. Why do you have to help her? She made her decision, Jacob, and it broke you. The room falls eerily silent, like everyone's breath or sallow for fear of proving their co-conspirator in Leah's words. They're not supposed to talk about these things. Jacob almost opens his mouth to protest. Have you even looked at yourself? Leah continues before he can speak. You're a wreck. You know that picture of Bella when she came to you with the bikes? The one you carry around inside your mind like a bad tattoo you can't remove? Jacob swallows. Leah's never been a fan of keeping her sentiments quiet for long, and appears it's high time to explode. That's how you look, Jake, she finally finishes. That's how you look. Her last words are quiet, the last floating whisper of air out of a balloon. They watch him. He remains motionless for what feels like a long time. That's probably only a minute. His eyes on the table and his hands flat against his knees. It doesn't matter, he finally says after a swallow. Jacob looks up at Sam, frowning at the other end of the table. If it's just me, that's fine, but I have to go. I don't like this, Embry mumbles. Watching Sam, Jacob whispers, You understand. Sam nods. Emily lingers at his side. And yes, he does understand these things. The flight is long. It's impossible to get them all flights together, so they go in groups of two. Paul grumbles about needing to have enough money to eat, but Emily just smiles softly and promises she'll make him a whole feast when he gets back. Jacob flies over with Rosalie. She wanted to get back quickly, and he wanted to get there quickly, and he diverts his face from the stench of her, and she from him. "I'd Febreze you if I could," Rosalie grumbles. Jacob doesn't even reply, keeps his hands bunching the rough fabric of his jeans around his knees for the entire flight. It's almost cold in Alaska upon landing. A vampire he doesn't recognize waits scowling in the doorway when they arrive at the house, too lavish for the desolate surroundings. "Vampires don't acknowledge the land the way the pack does," he notes. "The pack is natural, tied to it. It's in their heritage. Vampires just go against it, destroy it." He growls. Rosalie glances back at him like she understands. "That's Irina," Rosalie mumbles. "She's not dangerous." "You're all dangerous," Jacob grumbles. She frowns. "You should have waited for the rest of your pack if you're concerned about your personal safety." Her words pinch his skin. Of course he wasn't going to delay in getting here. Edward suddenly pops into the doorframe. He almost looks relieved at the sight of them, but Jacob thinks he can't be seeing things properly from a distance. Edward steps aside when Jacob reaches the threshold. The marble tiles of the expensive house peek their mirror images up at them, and Jacob can't help but think of old vampire legends without reflections and garlic allergies. Things were way easier in the fake versions with girls who knew to keep their hands to themselves. "She's this way," Edward says slowly, eyeing Jacob's downward gaze. Their sweeping staircase creaks beneath their weight as they veer up into the left, to a corner room. Edward opens the door, again standing on the side as Jacob surveys the space, the light gliding in through windows, expanding across the wooden floors, and fanning out to the edge of the room, where there sits a bed containing one Bella Swan. It isn't until Jacob tries to move that he realizes he hasn't been breathing since the sight of her, but he does move. Moving closer with hands that feel floating, like the numbness when not enough blood is rushing to them. He thinks it's all too caught up in his heart. It doesn't work as well these days. He perches on the edge of the bed lightly, as though afraid to wake her, as though she is capable of waking. Her face is blank with no joy and no sadness, no pain, though he's relieved at that. Even her eyes are still, although they should be twitching in her dream state. "She looks dead," he notes, wincing at the word. His hand shakes as he reaches forward to rest a too large hand against her cheek. "She just lies here," he whispers. "Yes," Rosalie says. Jacob jumps, not realizing, forgetting they could hear him. Edward hovers near the bedpost, a hand resting against it with a deep frown. Jacob looks at Edward, hating, as usual, how Bella keeps dragging them together when he'd rather be far away. The burning in his nose is nothing like the strain in his chest. "What do you want me to do?" Edward runs a hand through his hair. Jacob can't help but notice, well, how old he looks. He knows it's an impossibility, that Edward looks the same as he did when Jacob last saw him, the day of that final battle, but he looks so weary. Jacob doesn't want to admit that. By this point, Jacob probably looks the same way, wilting hands and eyes that look too old. "Carlisle can explain it best," Edward says, turning to the doorway and calling out the older vampire's name. Carlisle appears quickly, and Jacob shudders on instinct, his mind counting out 3, 2, 1. Those aren't good odds. He wonders when he'll ever stop fighting. His eyes on the ground. When he looks up, Edward looks away. "Jacob," Carlisle says smoothly. Jacob hates the way they move and speak like that, inhumanly fluid. It matches the cold of their skin, balances directly against the fiery anger of the pack, and he wonders, not for the first time, which approach is better, keeping everything in or letting everything spill out. Instinctively, he looks back at Bella. Bella! He used to snap from one end to the other, from explosion to implosion. He wonders if she will glide straight into the smooth skating rink of the vampires, or In typical Bella fashion, she will trip and fall. He doesn't think she might not wake up to do either. His eyes tick back to Carlisle. What do you want? He hopes his words don't come out with a sneer. Carlisle gestures to Bella's bed. Sit, he says, Edward prickling by the doorway. Jacob accepts the invitation, though, sitting on the side of the bed where Bella's hand lies palm up in sleep. Almost instinctively, he dances a finger along the inside of her palm and doesn't even notice Edward's glares. Edward coughs, though, and that does make Jacob lift his head away from Bella's still fingers and typically chipped nail polish. Carlisle is watching Jacob in an observantly eerie way that makes Jacob outwardly squirm. We have a lead on what to do about Bella, Carlisle explains, his eyes ticking toward her at her name. Over the years, I've collected a lot of contacts, and I've been doing some digging. At this, he hands Jacob a shining black folder, stuffed full of papers and notes. Jacob leafs through them, absorbing nothing. Carlisle approaches, and while Jacob tries to keep calm, Carlisle points out the top page, a picture of a redhead and a dress scribbled underneath. The picture is stern, though falsely so, as though she is about to laugh at something behind the camera. Jacob can see the left corner of her lips poking up. She's the head of a major coven in London, Edward explains, moving off the bedpost he was leaning on. We think she'll be able to help us. Her power is pretty crazy, or so the rumors go, if you trust them. Rosalie scoffs. I don't. Edward rolled his eyes. Rumors, Jacob asks, eyeing Rosalie's amused reaction. Her hand circle. Almost killed the world, turned around and defeated the source of evil, yada yada. She barks out a laugh. The universe is prone to over-exaggeration. The point is, Edward interrupts, she doesn't do well with our kinds. Rumors go she runs with a vampire slayer, whatever that is. More exaggerations, Rosalie mumbles. Edward glares up at her again and then continues. The point is, she doesn't like us, but if you're human, somewhat, anyway, and you don't know about us, and she'll listen to you. Jacob frowns. I'm a human with a twist, you know. Edward shrugs. That should be fine. We haven't heard anything about her relationship with werewolves. Jacob flips open the folder again, squinting at the quickly written address. London, he says, trailing off. The guys are going to kill me for all this airfare. We'll cover it, Edward interjects immediately. Jacob's head snaps up so quickly his neck rebels. That's not what I know that's not what you're suggesting, Edward sighs. It's what you're getting. Don't need your charity. His teeth grind together. It's not charity, Edward sighs. It's a thank you. The doorbell rings. Rosalie wrinkles her nose. It's your pack. I'm glad they know how to follow directions. Jacob suppresses the urge to retort. This woman, he says, turning to Edward. What's her name? Carlisle answers for him. Willow Rosenberg. You'll find her phone number on the top of that page, too. She works at a boarding school for girls in London. The vampires slip out of the room, Edward tossing a glance behind him at Bella's still form on the bed as he exits. Jacob follows, the folder grasped in his hand. He watches Bella with hope of life until he clicks the door shut. In the vast hallways, everything echoes, the sound of his breathing, the hollow sound of the closing door, his feet on the stairs. Every noise is amplified and sweeping like a cyclone whirling in repetition. He hasn't admitted to himself that his hands haven't stopped shaking since he saw Bella on that bed. It reminded him of a funeral viewing. The Alaskan air is perfect for their t-shirts and jeans. It's been a long time since they met weather they were comfortable with, and Leah leans back into the frozen ground. They fled outside to escape the stench of nearly a dozen vampires in a confined space. Paul runs his hands along the stiff ground. I don't like this. Why? I think the weather's lovely. Leah smiles, knowing that's not what he means. His eyes tick back toward her with a glower. We can't trust them. Seth sits up. He's been lying on the ground as well, mimicking his sister. You said that before we got here, he points out. And Rosalie was telling the truth. That leech, Paul bites, was probably only trying to get us into some deeper danger. Jacob flexes his fingers. If you don't want to come, you can very easily stay behind. And that's another thing, Paul says, ignoring him. Since when did we become charity cases for vampires? Leah rolls her eyes from the ground, looking up at Jacob to her right. I'm with you, she says quietly and with more sincerity than any of them are used to hearing from her usually sarcastic throat. Jacob watches her and she gives a slight smile. When he looks up, Sam is looking at the ground too closely, and Jacob imagines that the next time they shift, they will all be hit by too many memories of when Leah used to look at Sam with any semblance of happiness. We're all with you, Sam says, voice strong but no eye contact. Paul sighs and flops onto his back. I hate it when you give orders. Seth laughs. That's what she said. And his sister swiftly smacks him on the forehead. Jacob can't help but softly smile, though. When he looks up at Sam, the older man has finally removed his stare from the earth. Thank you, Jacob says, each word heavy and meaning too much. The flight to London is long, and Edward and Rosalie, who insisted on coming with them, have quite luckily booked seats in the front, far away. They would take the first-class seats, Paul grumbles. Shut up, Jared mumbles from next to him and tucks the eye mask further over his eyes, turning away from Paul's window seat. From the row behind Jacob, Leah pops her gum. He twists to look at her, laughing. You're not even going to try to sleep. It's not a question. Sam is already snoring next to him. She shakes her head. Can't sleep on planes. Jacob nods. Me neither. Too cramped. He tries to stretch out his legs under the chair, but manages nothing. The sides of the airplane whiz around them, and her eyes take over Jacob's shoulder to Sam's sleeping form. Jake, she starts, slowly, cautiously. Would you mind if we switched seats? Just for a minute? Her eyes seem to glimmer in the dim overhead light. He nods swiftly, unbuckling his seatbelt and moving to the side for Leah to take his place next to Sam. He doesn't mean to look. He tries not to. But he can't help but see. A few minutes later, Leah finally reaches across the armrest to divide to brush a piece of Sam's hair out of his face. Sam twitches on contact, and Jacob jumps. Though Leah remains unfazed and unafraid of any possible consequences. Emily, Sam mumbles, a hand reaching out to and landing softly on Leah's arm. She's standing in a fraction of a second, it seems, before Jacob has any time to feel the pangs of sympathy. You can go back now, she says, already standing in the aisle, eyes to the ground. She is silent for the rest of the flight, except for once. The breakfast trolley is pushing in when she taps him on the shoulder and whispers, almost angrily, Don't think about that. Jacob nods and it flies away. He misses when secrets were real and confided hopes were kept hidden without struggle. Walking through the airport makes him absurdly uncomfortable because everyone eyes the Cullens with the awe Jacob never sees, never saw, no past tense. He trains himself in Bella's eyes. Some people eye the pack up with worry, their shabby clothes and mused hair, too long since a shave and too much jet lag for all of them. The suitcases take too long to come spinning out, and Jacob paces until the last bag, Leah's, is with its proper owner. Did you have to bring this much? Seth grumbles, tugging it off the conveyor belt. Leah could, of course, handle it herself, but there's an amused glint in her eye that comes with her brother's suffering. Yeah, Leah nods. You think I'm going to spend a whole weekend in London without having too much fun? They all wince collectively at that, knowing what memories will be coming. Everyone but Jacob, that is, who is beginning to understand Leah too well. Here, Edward says, arm extended. I've got it. Leah shakes her head. You don't. I've got it. Edward says, almost smiling. Leah's hand slips to her side without another word. Embry rolls his eyes. Truthless bastard, he says, but Edward doesn't so much as twist. It just keeps walking a few feet ahead of the pack next to Rosalie, their mouths moving too quickly and too quietly for any of them to understand. They wait by the automatic doors, peeking out the windows and seeming relieved at the typically rainy day. We're going to the hotel first, Rosalie said when the pack reached her. Then, however many of you want, preferably not all, it'll make her uncomfortable. You'll go to the address Carlisle gave Jacob. Edward and I will wait for you at the hotel. Jacob shakes his head. I don't need to go to the hotel. I'll just dump my stuff with you guys and head over there. I did an internet search. It's an hour or so out of the town, and we can't wait too long. We made you an appointment later this evening, and you need to drop off your bags, Rosalie said sternly, as though to a poorly behaving child. Besides, Bella's condition is not going to change anytime soon. An extra hour won't kill her. That was a bad choice of words, though, because both Edward and Jacob seemed to stop breathing at the simple realization that sometimes people don't come out of comas. Sometimes people stay shattered off until their minds slip up, and there's nothing but a body too similar to the way it was minutes before, except for the simple fact of a pulse. Both of them had been living in a reality where all this was fixable, but quite suddenly they simultaneously realized that no, maybe it's not. Come on, Sam said softly to the two stilled men, eyes wide and on each other in mutual realization. We can't help anyone from here. The cab ride is too long. Jacob tears apart London underground maps in his lap while his leg shakes like an earthquake. The hotel is expansive, as expected, but Jacob has little time to notice as he plops his bags down in a room that he'll be sharing with Sam. Leah steps into the doorway. Shall we? She asks. As Jacob finishes retying his shoes, Sam blinks. You're not coming. A dry mix of laugh and snarl escapes her mouth. Like hell I'm not. Would you prefer Paul's tendency towards violence or Jared's too inappropriate jokes? No way. I'm going. I'm a big girl. Leah, Sam says, low and intense, and suddenly Jacob feels swept by the feeling like he's not really there. Like it's just the two of them and their baggage piling up in the space between them until their eyes are obscured. It's dangerous. Her fingers are splayed flat against her jeans. I don't care, she says, and her voice might crack on the last word. It's very rare that Sam and Leah are alone together, and while Jacob thought he understood the reasons behind that, the past 30 seconds have proved he forgot one essential factor in their relationship. Imprinting doesn't erase the love that you had before, even if it is weaker than gravitational pull of another's heart. And that's why Sam can't look at Leah anymore. He can't be faithful to anyone. Jacob exhales quietly in the corner at the pressure inside him, and it seems to be enough to snap the two out of their hypnosis. Fine, Sam says, voice back to level and pushing past her in the hallway. But if I say we get out, we get out. No heroics from you. No, sir, Leah grumbles, tossing a wink at Jacob behind her like he can't see straight through. End chapter 1.